Hey there, this is the Debt-Free Mom Podcast, and I am not Carly, but I am here with Carly because we are going to talk today about summer side hustles. If you follow Debt-Free Mom on Instagram, Carly's been sharing a lot about her side hustles, picking up cleaning houses and detailing cars. And there's been a lot of great conversation around that from people interested in everything from why did you start doing that and how do you start and what do I need to do in order to start my own side hustle. So what I wanted to talk to you about is just let's get the lowdown. Let's get all the details about how do you start, where do you start, where do you go, everything about taking a side hustle from an idea to actually making money from it. So maybe just start with what made you choose cleaning as a side hustle?
So what made me choose it currently in this summer is that it is something I have already done. So I had started cleaning houses in high school, cleaned multiple houses all throughout college. It was a fantastic side job as a student because I was cleaning houses for people who worked full time. So I really got to pick any time, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, anything that worked into my schedule to clean their house. It wasn't like childcare where they needed a specific block of time. It was like, as long as I came and cleaned the house that week, that was great for everybody. So that was something that I really enjoyed doing when I was a student. And then cleaned houses haphazardly, like after we were married and even a little bit after having kids. It was more occasional than regular at that point. But this summer, as we've been talking pretty openly about like business revenue bouncing around and going down, and then combined that with increasing prices of everything. And then also our kids attend a private school and the scholarship program that we have used the past 4 years has gone away. So in August, we know that our family costs are going to be going up. So I just started thinking of what are ways that I can supplement our income without dramatically rocking the boat of our family rhythms and routines. And for me, I knew from what I had done in the past that cleaning is one of those ways to do that. So started cleaning houses again, and I have one that I did a move-in clean, like they had just moved into this house, and so it was kind of still messy from the previous owner and just messy from the process of moving. So I did a big deep clean of this house, and then now they're having me do it once a month, and then I have somebody that I'm going to visit with to do like a consultation, and she wants to have her house cleaned twice a month. And that's probably about as much as I'll want to take on in the short term. But I mean, 3 a month compared to having 0 2 weeks ago is a good jump back into a little bit of extra income.
And so also started detailing cars as well as cleaning houses. And that, I know that's something you haven't done before. So how did you get there from cleaning houses to detailing cars?
So on Instagram, I've been talking about Care Creates Contentment for years. And one of the things that I often shared was cleaning the inside of my vehicles, especially because we drive older, higher miles vehicles. And so it was really important to me to demonstrate that you can value and care for a vehicle that most other people would say is garbage, is like far beyond its life. And by doing that, not only do you just mentally create contentment for yourself, you actually retain the value of the vehicle that you purchased and can get more back for it when you're ready to sell. So I've been doing that on my own, in my own vehicles for years without ever, it never crossed my mind to do that for someone else. And then as I was talking about cleaning houses and side hustles, and then later, you know, separately talking about doing something in our van, whoever this was, I owe a cup of coffee or something, because someone responded to that story and was like, you should just do this for other people's cars. I was like, duh, like, of course I should. It just makes so much sense and is something that I know is highly valuable to other people. And it's also a pain point of similarly, just like you don't want to clean your own house, you don't want to clean your own car, but you spend sometimes just as much time in your car as you do in your house. And so it's like a second home that you, it can get messy easily, but you also at the same time want it to be clean. So I just, through that person kind of prompting me to think along those lines, I was like, okay, I do know I have the skills, the knowledge, the equipment, and the time to do that for other people. So I'm just going to test it out.
One thing that I think it's interesting. It's interesting to me to see this play out, but I think it's especially interesting for people that might not know you as well as I do. that cleaning other people's houses and cleaning other people's cars, I know you are very good at it, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we do that all the time for our own stuff. You know, it's not like our house is spotless or our cars are spotless. You just did it in preparation for us going on a road trip.
But I don't normally even do that. I don't normally clean it in anticipation of us going on a road trip.
Right. So tell us a little bit about that. What's the difference between having the skills to do that and doing it for yourself versus doing it for other people?
So I think being hired by someone to do something and knowing that they expect something of you and they're going to pay you for it, just in my mind, puts a completely different expectation of responsibility on me. And then your own house is just different. Like it's the exact same idea as your house could be messy for weeks and you could be overwhelmed by it. And then if you have a friend coming over, you're able to completely clean it in like 20 minutes. And it's like, okay, what was even the point of stressing about that for all this time thinking it was overwhelming? It required the knowledge that someone else was going to see it to change the way you did it. And so that's the entire feeling behind doing that for someone else. I think there's just, it's a learned skill. It's something, you know, I mean, I think there's similar things like, do dietitians eat dessert? Do, you know, physical trainers watch TV? Like there's things that you know are the best practice and you can become knowledgeable and skillful in how to do them to the, you know, to the extreme or to the highest standard, while at the same time understanding that for yourself in a more long-term way of just like your own house that you're going to live in forever, you have a more realistic, lower standard.
Yeah. And another thing I think is interesting around this topic is you have the skill, you are being hired to do this for other people, and we're also now hiring somebody else to come in and clean our own house.
you know? Do you want me to talk a little about that? Okay. So I learned to clean houses from a youth group leader, mentor, person who was just kind of in my life all through junior high and high school. We also happened to live in the same neighborhood. She is excellent at cleaning. And she also, unlike me, she keeps her house very clean. She does a great job of doing that in her own home. So she invited me to come alongside her. And I started with like, I pet sat for her. And then I watered their flowers when they were on vacation. And then I babysat some of her younger kids. And so I kind of just became almost like the mother's helper kind of person in their family. I mean, you even know, even after we got married, we house sat at their house and stuff. Yeah. Like they were just like, I was for a long time, I felt kind of just like part of their family. But she was willing to not only pay me to clean their house, but to clean alongside me. So I know that that was like a huge, now looking back, like that was a gift that she gave me, even though I was also like, I mean, she cleaned faster than I could clean and more like perfectly than I could do. And a lot of it was just like learning by watching of like, I would think that something was clean. And then I would see her moving in a different part of the room. I'd be like, oh, I need to go back to that because I was not as clean as what she wants this to be. So I learned from her how to do it. And I kind of learned how to be like, that you got to get down, like you are going to be dirty and you're going to feel gross by the time you're done. And that means that you did a good job. So like I learned how to really give it my all in doing that and also how to move fast because she moved fast. She's a very fast-paced person. So I learned those skills from her and I'm grateful now at this point. I mean, this was like 16 to 18 years ago at this point. And I know that that kind of had my, what I am able to do now had its roots in what she was willing to teach me. And I now feel very confident charging people a lot more than what I got when I was in high school and college because I have the experience and I know the quality of the work that I do. So I had the thought about a month ago, I want to find that person for me. And so I don't have any expectation that she needs to become part of our family or something if she's listening. But I just had the thought of like, I can do the same thing. I can teach someone else this skill and I can benefit from having someone come in and clean. So I had a few things like I didn't want to and couldn't really afford to pay someone $40 to $50 an hour to come and clean our house. And I also didn't want the whole house. So I didn't want like a Molly maid kind of service where they, you don't really pick and choose what they do. They just come through into your whole house. I wanted to be able to say, I only need the first floor. I only need these kind of tasks and I'm going to pay $20 an hour. And so I posted that on my personal Facebook, and I had a couple, I knew that 20, you know, 18 to 20 year olds are not on Facebook, but their moms are. And so I had, you know, it took a couple weeks, but a couple weeks later, I had someone's mom message me and say, my daughter's going to be home for college. She's looking for, she has a part-time job. She's looking for a few supplemental things to earn a little bit more in the summer. Could she do this for you? And I was like, great. So she came and did that last week. So my mom math around that is that I charge $40 to $50 an hour to clean other people's houses. And I can turn around and pay this college student $20 an hour for more light housekeeping. And also, again, like, she doesn't have the skills or experience. So there were a few things, you know, like when she cleaned the house this week, that now next week I'll kind of tell her, like, oh, this area maybe needs a little bit more attention or whatever. And I also know that I'm paying her a substantially higher hourly wage than what her part-time job is. So it's benefiting, it's mutually beneficial. And so in the mom math of that, I'm able to clean someone else's house for 3 to 4 hours and turn that into 6 to 8 hours of my own house getting cleaned. And so that has been, that's been why I've done that, because of the same thing from your previous question too, of it's just a different task to clean your own house. So I would rather clean someone else's house and then take a portion of that and pay someone else to clean mine. And then everybody's houses is getting cleaned. I'm making a little bit of cash on the side, and I don't have to feel that like mental burden of my house is unclean.
So you laid out your whole story of acquiring these skills and learning how to do it, and then becoming confident that you can do it, confident enough to even show somebody else the ropes. How do you then go about getting people to pay you for a side hustle?
Yeah. So I think from the time that that person said, hey, you should do this for other people, to the time that I had a Calendly page up and running for people to book was like 6 hours or something. I just kind of dove into it. But I think it's a willingness to try and a willingness to be bad at something new. So even as Debt Free Mom has grown over the years, when I started and I was very unsure of what I was doing and what I was charging, I charged a lot lower rate because I was going to benefit from the experience. So I could afford to charge a lower rate because I was going to get value out of it. It wasn't just going to be me providing the client with value. I was actually getting value of learning how to do it well. So I feel like the same thing now, I can replicate that in different skills or in different side hustles that I want to do. I can take that same lesson and apply it to different things. So with the car detailing, I was like, okay, I know how to explain exactly what I can and can't do, because I now know as a business owner that it's just as important to be able to say what you're not able to offer a client as what you are able to offer. I was able to reasonably and competitively price myself so that I knew I was getting value for my time and could cover my materials, because there were materials involved, but also be low enough that people were willing to, you know, take a chance on me, so to speak. Of, I can't come out of the gate having never done this for someone before and charge $400 for a car detail. I don't have the experience to do that. If I do this continuously a year from now, I probably could. So that's the kind of the trajectory that I want to have in mind, is that I am A-okay with a very low, you know, or below average rate that I'm charging, so that I can learn and get that experience. And then I can roll that into increasing prices if I want to. So for this, the car detailing, once I had that page up and once I, you know, created a few very haphazard before and after pictures in Canva and stuff, then I shared it on Debt Free Mom. However, the vast, vast majority of people on there do not live anywhere close to me. Like, I do not have a local following. So I knew that when I was sharing it on there, it was not to get clients, really. So where I actually shared it and got people who responded was my personal Facebook, my personal Instagram, and then I think I posted it in one, like, local moms group or something. And with those kind of services, which for most people's side hustles, anything that's like those care services, I don't know what you call them, but like pet sitting, house cleaning, childcare, all of that kind of stuff, word of mouth is by far the most effective. Like, referrals of, like, you do that first client and you do it so well that they are floored and they want to tell other people about it, then you just got free advertising. And so that's kind of the approach that I took, of like doing it really, really well. I mean, always doing it really well, but really, like, going in there with like, I want them to be surprised at what they're getting for how much they're paying. And then that just naturally inspires people to tell other people and get referrals that way. So although I do have a large Instagram following on a business account, the actual car detailing that I have done has come, I think, 5 out of 6 that I have booked. No, I take that back. 2 out of 6 that I have either already done or have booked have come from Debt-Free Mom Instagram, and the other 4 have come from just going through personal local channels.
Acquiring customers is one part of it, but then you have to deliver what you're offering. And if you want repeat business and you want to wow them so that they share it with others, you got to really delight customers as well. So what are some of the ways that you talked about acquiring customers, but what are some of the ways that you deliver great value from the things that you're doing and delight them?
Yeah. So I think maybe it's not a wow factor, but having clear expectations ahead of time. So you set the tone of what they're looking for when they come to look at the house or the car once you're finished. You know, you don't want them to think that it's going to be brand new and not have a single crumb, scratch, whatever, when it's a 12-year-old vehicle or something. So setting those expectations ahead of time, I think having pictures, if anything is visual, if you're doing anything that is visual, having pictures that they can look at ahead of time before they purchase so that they kind of get an idea of like, oh, this is what she does. This is the transformation that's expected. And then the other thing was on the booking page, I commented to Kyle when I put it together for the first time how surprised I was at how quickly I was able to get out in front of issues that may possibly arise by doing something like car detailing. So putting questions in there like, do you smoke in the vehicle? And then it was a yes or no question. And then I had in parentheses next to yes, I said like, if so, please be advised that while I can clean it and make it better, I will not be able to remove a smoke smell from a vehicle. You know, so just things like that. Or I allow people to say if they want the car to be detailed at my house or at their house. But if it's at their house, then I have a whole thing of like, I'm going to need access to hot water and power. So if you select this location, please verify that you will be able to give me access to hot water and power. You know, so just things like that, that in the course of having done both other, you know, other services like cleaning houses, but then other totally separate things of just running a business and running into customer service, clientele problems kind of thing, I was able to kind of sit down and think through what could come up and what expectation do I want to have for them before it does. So it was just a cool way to see those kind of entrepreneurial thought processes kind of snowball into being able to be applied to something that is totally different than Debt-Free.
I know, I think it was maybe the second or third car that you detailed after you started doing this, as you're setting expectations about what you do and with the service and what you don't do. It was one of the cars that came to our house, and you did it. And then when the car owner came back, one of the first things that they did was pop the trunk.
And I was like, because I didn't clean the trunk.
Nor were you supposed to. Like that was...
No, I had not said, and I don't know, you know, and that's a really good example, because that's the kind of stuff that when you bootstrap making up your own service kind of thing, like as he opened the trunk, I was like, is a trunk covered in a car detail? Because I hadn't said that I was going to do that. Now, I will say from then on, I have done the trunk. But that's one of those live and learn moments where in the moment, as soon as he popped the trunk, I was like, if he's disappointed about the trunk, I will give him a partial refund. Like, because that is just one of those business skills that you just learn. Like, I felt that like social anxiety in the moment. He didn't say anything. He literally opened it and he goes, oh, you don't do the trunk. And then he just closed it. But again, I had I had the experience from past times of offering customer service kind of things where I just, you know, the customer's always right. Maybe the trunk was included. If he thought the trunk should be included and I didn't say the trunk is excluded, that's on me, not on him, you know? And so unless it was something, you know, really unreasonable, like you didn't wipe the outside of my tires, you know?
Oil?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, if he would have been like visibly disappointed that I had not vacuumed the trunk and had expressed that to me, I would have, you know, offered a, you know, I don't know, $20 or $30 refund on the spot. And those are the kinds of things that like you just have to be okay with experiencing the ups and the downs, that like some people, no matter what you do, are going to be upset. And then other people are going to be upset for really valid reasons. And you need to be adaptable to learn from them.
So one important skill that you kind of breeze past it, but I think one really important skill is that you saw the potential for like future clients. Like, oh, maybe there's going to be people who aren't as, you know, go with the flow as this guy was. Mm-hmm. They might actually be upset about the trunk. So let's build that into the expectations I'm setting for my customer. Mm-hmm. So I know there's been a couple of times, especially early on, as you detailed a few of these cars, where you've gone back to your booking page or to your agreement and you've made changes because no one's holding you to a standard of it has to be this certain way. Like, you are making up the rules for what this is. You're the one setting the parameters.
Which is the good and the bad.
Yes. Yes. So you have the flexibility to change it. And that's just classic business acumen is like, you set the rules of the thing that you're providing, but the customer sets the rules of if they're going to buy it.
The demand. Not. Yeah.
So it's a push and pull of figuring out what value you can bring to the customer and what they're going to see as valuable that they're willing to pay you for.
And something I've learned specifically from Debt-Free Mom is that what I imagine people want and what they actually want is almost always like opposite. Like I can theorize on it, you know, kind of arbitrarily, but then when we actually test things out by presenting them to customers, what they do with it is often very different than what I expect them to do. So one thing with that is like with the car detailing, the first one that I didn't post any pictures or videos. And I was like, you know, when I mentioned it later on Instagram, I was like, it's a private thing. I'm not going to show the inside of someone else's vehicle. And the person that I cleaned for follows me. And she was like, you should have taken pictures and videos, you know? And so then what I did was, and so she took before and after pictures and she sent them to me, like, please share these. And so what I did was, like you said, I went back into the form and I just put a question saying, can I take before and after pictures and videos and share them with other, you know, with future potential clients is what I said, which is basically just AKA Instagram.
Universe.
The universe is my potential client. But I said in that question, I will never share face, name, license plate, you know, that kind of, you know, identifying information or whatever. And then they can say yes or no. And I'm going to do exactly what I would do either way. And they're not punished for saying no or whatever. But every single person since I added that has said yes. I have not had someone say no yet. So again, I assumed no one wants pictures of the inside of their car on a large Instagram account, even if there isn't, you know, there's still an embarrassment when you know that it's your car, even if nobody else knows that it's your car. But again, surprisingly, like everybody said, yes. So now I have lots of before and after pictures and videos. And every time I finish a detail, I get to, you know, come home and share some of those before and afters. And that can perpetuate the cycle of adding new customers.
One thing that I know we have worked very closely together over the last few years, especially with Debt-Free Mom, but now that's translated to cleaning houses and car detailing, is putting together an offer. So you have a service that you are providing. And I know when you first started years ago, when you first started cleaning houses, your offer and your service were not different. Your service was, I'm going to clean your house and I'm going to do it for this many dollars an hour. And that was your offer. But there's a big difference between the service or the product that you're providing and the offer that you're communicating to a potential customer. The service or the product is the tangible thing that you're giving to them, but the offer is how you're packaging it and how you're presenting it. So talk to us a little bit about how you used your experience from all these years to create an offer around these services of house cleaning and car detailing.
So I think, like you said, when I had done it before, I just basically described what I was doing and thought that that was my messaging or that was my, you know, marketing. I wouldn't have even thought of it as marketing, but that's what it was. Where, like you said, I would like post on my personal Facebook and be like, I can clean your house for $25 an hour. Anybody interested? Which just like now, this many years later of being in business, I'm like, no wonder that fell flat. That's so horrible. That's so uncompelling. And you need to be compelling. So like just some of the very basic things of communicating the transformation is something that I did not understand at all. And, you know, rightfully so when I was 18 or whatever. And now that I do, that like when I first came out with like, hey, I've decided to do this, I had a name for it and I had before and after pictures to show the transformation of this is what the vehicle looked like before and this is what it looks like after. These are the products I'll use. It's this much money and it only takes this much time. So like, I now understand like scarcity and urgency and perceived likelihood of achievement and like these things that matter to people subconsciously often when they're deciding if something is worth the risk or not, because everybody is weighing or filtering everything they do through these cost benefit analysis of like, how likely am I to get the value that this person is saying that I'm likely to get? How much time or effort will it involve on my part? And what happens if it goes wrong? And so being able to understand those concepts and work them into the way I talk about it ahead of time can make even something new that you've never charged someone for before compelling.
If you're not paid once a month, why are you budgeting that way? A monthly budget ignores the fact that sometimes your expenses are due before the next paycheck is available. A pay period budget is built around your unique pay schedules so that your money doesn't feel like a mess. Create an accurate, realistic plan for getting the most out of each paycheck. Get started budgeting by pay period today with the best-selling budget template and mini course from me, Debt-Free Mom. It's available for just $9 at debtfreemom.co/template.
Do you have a few events or trips this summer that could use a special outfit? Right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. Just visit armoire.style/debtfreemom to get up to 50% off your first month. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Swap them for more new-to-you styles when you're ready. Within the last week, I wore a hot pink jumpsuit for Mother's Day and a bright blue dress to the symphony, all from Armoire. I can try brighter colors than I normally choose, all without adding clutter to my closet or a high price tag to my budget. It's perfect for women who love to shop but are working on reducing their spending. Right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/debtfreemom. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/debtfreemom to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
And so when you are creating this compelling offer of your products and services, I think there's a few key things that you want to include in creating that offer. One of the ones that usually with Debt-Free Mom, we collaborate on what these things are. And we, you know, you did all of this, just you went for it. Like, I think, like you said, it was like 6 hours between I decided to do this and you had a booking page up. So when I then saw the final product and people were like actually buying it, I was noticing you putting all these things into practice, which was really cool. And one of the ones that stood out to me immediately was it was not called car detailing. It was called
Minivan makeover.
You had a little catchy, cute name for it, which is half the battle. You know, you very quickly communicate.
And I leaned into, he always tells me, be clear, not cute. So I was very happy with this because I felt like this name was both of like, it had the alliteration and it had like the, you know, the minivan word automatically attracts moms. But it was still a description of what I do instead of having to say something and then have people be like, oh, what's that?
Right. Like, example of something that would have been cute or creative but not clear would be like Heavenly Automobiles or something like that, you know? Still kind of communicates the same thing. And you could get roundabout explaining
it. But you're
it.
Still kind of like,
Yeah, you're like, and then you have to explain what it is. Where minivan makeover, instantly you know my minivan is getting clean. In some way.
Yeah.
So when you're creating an offer, naming it is not the end all be all, but it is an important part of crafting an offer around the product or the service.
I mean, I think even like that happened with Debt-Free Mom of like, I just mulled over, you know, so many like, oh, what should it be called? And what, you know, it's going to, this name, whatever this name is, it's going to be everywhere. It needs to really be, you know, catchy or whatever. And what I ended up with was just like describing what I am. But it's like, it's stuck. And it's like, a lot of times I've found even that people remember, people don't even know my name And they're just like, oh, it's Debt-Free Mom, because it's like it describes me. So it can be the name of my business, and it could be something where, like, if people are sharing something and they're like, oh, I, you know, found this recipe from, they say, from Debt-Free Mom. Because, you know, sometimes some of those businesses where I really was trying to come up with a business name for a long time at the beginning. And it wouldn't have described me. It would have been something about personal finance or, you know, something like that. But it couldn't have been like a nickname for me or whatever. And so because it plays so well on something so social, like Instagram, of talking about people, they don't need to remember that my name is Carly. They can say like, oh, on, you know, on Debt-Free Mom stories, I saw whatever, because it works as a name too. And so it was like, okay, being clear. I personally think both matter. I like both clear and cute, but having a higher emphasis on clear pays off.
So there are probably people listening that couldn't care less about cleaning or side hustles. And so if you've stuck out this long and that's you, hey, more power to you. Probably on a long road trip listening to a podcast. But there's probably people listening who are interested in cleaning houses or cleaning vehicles as a thing to try. And there's also probably another group of people who have their own idea for a side hustle, but haven't yet acted on it or want to step up their game when it comes to turning that skill that they're good at into making a little bit of money on the side. So what are some pieces of advice that you would give to people who are interested in taking that next step with a side hustle, but don't quite know how to put their next foot forward?
I would first say be willing to do it for free. I know that there's a lot of people who are like, charge what you're worth and it doesn't matter that you've never done it before. I don't subscribe to that at all. I think that there is, like I said earlier, so much value in doing it and learning from doing that. Being willing to do it for free is not, you're not shorting yourself. You get so much value out of that. And so that's how I did, you know, custom budgets started by people asking me to make their budget. I was terrified of making someone's budget for them. So I did it 5 or 6 times for free. I decided what I wanted to do, what the scope of the service was going to be. And I charged $25 and did that for a long time because that's what I felt comfortable with. I'm super risk averse. I am not, although, you know, in this episode, we're talking about these things that I jumped into. First, I was not always that way. And second, I'm still not really prone to that. And so I felt like $25 was like, either I could give it back to them and I'm not going to lose out on anything if they're upset. And then also just people are going to be willing to say yes. And I feel, you know, I'm not going to be nervous about like, oh my gosh, in the next 45 minutes, I have to offer $600 worth of value to this person. So being willing to do that and then also getting testimonials from those people. So if you clean someone's house, like I would literally say, I will clean your house for free if I can take before and after pictures and you'll give me a testimonial of how it felt to walk back into your house after I was done. So framing the testimonial specifically instead of just, if you just ask for an open-ended testimonial, people are just going to be like, it was good.
5 stars.
Yeah. And so like, giving a almost like a Mad Lib style testimonial of like, what?
I left my house and it was crazy. And I came back and it was noodles.
Blue. Maybe not Mad Lib style, but some guided prompts for what you're looking for so that they are prompted to describe what it was like before, describe the process of working with you, and describe the value they got out after. And if you offer something that is generally costing someone $200 and you do it for free, they will give you a testimonial. That's a bargain. You know, that's people are deal, you know, bargain hunters or whatever. So doing that and then learning what you need to be successful in future clients so that you can then charge money and ramp up your price. So maybe, you know, maybe you do it then 5 more times and you charge half of what you actually want to charge. And then, you know, you do it 5 more times and you work your way up to where you want to be. So for me, that I don't like to jump into the deep end going from never having done something to trying to charge $800 for it. And so that's the kind of buildup that I was comfortable with and that I really came to appreciate. So being willing to do it for lower than what you actually want to be paid while recognizing that you will get value out of it. And then also just having a really high standard for the service you provide. Like, always wanting to wow whatever client you're trying to serve, whatever service or product you're offering, you have to intrinsically believe in what you are doing and believe that what you are offering can be of value. So anytime you come at it from an angle of what's the minimum amount of work I can do here and get paid, no one's going to enjoy it, you or the client. So really going into it with a hard work attitude, which like sounds so trite and, you know, it's like obvious or whatever, but especially if when it's in something cleaning houses and cleaning cars, like I just go into it being like, you are going to get sweaty and you're going to be tired and your arms are going to be sore by the end. And it's, you know, but like halfway through, you're going to be regretting it. And that's normal. You know, like I just kind of have to talk myself through, like, that's what you do to provide people with a quality end result. And then just remind yourself, like, I'm getting paid $60 to do this. Like, this is quite literally twice as much as I made as a teacher. Like, I can be hot and sweaty and tired and crawling through the back of someone's car for 2.5 hours. I can do that. So I'm curious, if I had come to you before I created the offer and created the booking page, if I just came to you with the idea, what would have been some of the things that you would have walked me through or asked me in order to craft that offer that you're describing?
So crafting an offer is about highlighting the benefits and the value that you're providing at a price point that seems absurdly low. And it doesn't mean that you are scraping the bottom of charging the absolute minimum amount that you can, but it's providing overabundance of perceived value from the thing that you are doing in order to make it an incredibly easy yes for people to say, I want that thing. I want that offer. I'm going to buy it. So some of the things you can do is whatever you're doing, whether it's cleaning or it's childcare or it's your, you know, you have a little cottage bakery license out of your house and you're selling baked goods or whatever it might be, think about all of the value that you are giving to your customer. And some of it's going to seem obvious, but if you frame it in a way and you communicate it in a way that adds to the product or service, then it will be perceived as valuable. So for you, you're cleaning. One of the things that you offered was, I'll go to your house or you can drop your car off to me. Those you included in your offer as options and as a kind of a value add, instead of leaving it ambiguous to say, I'll clean your car, ... you clearly communicated the value of, I can go to you and it's this much, or you can bring it to me and it's this much. And so it gives the customer the option to choose, which is always good. You don't want to overload people with options, but you do want to have some flexibility so customers feel like they are making an autonomous decision. And you also want to just call out, like, I'm going to bring my own cleaning supplies to your house to get this done. And here's the list of cleaning supplies that I'm going to use. You don't have to say any of that in order to make a sale. But if you can be really clear about what you're doing and spell it out, that adds value to the service that you're providing. That is one of the differences between the kind of cleaning jobs that you did in high school and in
college.
Where
I just said, I'll come clean. And then it was like, what does that mean? We didn't have a mutual definition of what that actually meant.
Yes. But now you can say, when you're detailing a car, I'm going to clean the seats. If they're cloth, this is how I'm going to clean them. If they're leather, this is how I'm going to clean them. I'm going to, you know, vacuum. I'm going to wipe down with these cleaning products. I'm not going to clean your trunk, or I am going to clean your trunk.
Just decide.
Yeah. But each part of those expectations that you're building around the service you're providing are pieces of value that you're packing into your offer.
I think it also, it's like a sneaky way of demonstrating expertise, because it's like, oh, she's already thought about this part of it and this part of it. And oh, I didn't even think about, you know, the floor mats or whatever. And she mentioned those. So I think it's like, it's both setting the tone of what you're going to do and also showing that, like, hey, you know, cleaning your car is very overwhelming for you. I've done it so many times that I have a short bullet list of exactly what I need to do.
Exactly. So you can apply that to, especially if you're providing a service to somebody, spell out exactly what you're going to do. Now, you don't need a 10-page bulleted list of every single step along the way. but you do need to preempt their questions mm-hmm. and their potential objections to what your service will be. And if you can answer those before they even think about them, that adds a ton of value to your offer and, like you said, establishes your expertise so that the problem that they're experiencing, they are confident you can solve mm-hmm. for them, and it becomes a much easier yes mm-hmm. for people to purchase that offer.
So I know that we kind of have competing priorities or competing personalities on crafting these kinds of things and how much you're willing to just jump straight into the deep end of something you haven't done before versus how I tiptoe into the shallow end. So when it comes, if somebody else is out there and is more like me, who is very timid about charging anyone for anything, which I used to be that way. I mean, when I created what is now Pay Period Budget Academy and made it and people started buying it, I cried. Not happy tears.
What are they doing?
I cried over the overwhelming burden providing something for someone and being so scared of their reaction. So that's just a little glimpse into my thought process on it because, yeah, I literally cried and it wasn't because I was happy or relieved. It was out of fear. So if there's someone else like that and you
on the floor right now,
crying at the idea of charging someone, what would you say specifically about like the pricing aspect of how do they speak with confidence about charging?
So I love the advice that you have. Don't be afraid to do it for free. But I would caveat that, say you probably only need to do that once.
Okay.
Maybe twice. Don't feel like you need to have this just indefinite, like, well, I need to put in my 6 years of free work before I can get charged. You need to do it. And another thing is you can also do it for free for yourself
mm-hmm.
and document the pictures mm-hmm. or the process. Obviously, you don't want to have a testimonial from yourself on your website or on posting, but you can demonstrate.
Or from a spouse.
Yeah, don't do that. But you can demonstrate
yeah.
your skills mm-hmm. if you document mm-hmm. providing your service for yourself.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. But after you do that, after you have kind of established credibility, then I think what most people would do, kind of the intuitive thing, is to Google, you know, if you're cleaning cars, car detailing near me and see mm-hmm. what other people are charging for mm-hmm. it. And then try to go a little bit under mm-hmm. what somebody else is charging.
Yeah.
That almost always is a short-term losing tactic. And it's because that's what everyone is doing. Everyone is trying to undercut you. So there's going to be somebody who is more established,
mm-hmm.
who is better at whatever it is than you are, or at least perceived to be better. And they are going to see that you're undercutting them by $2 and they're going to undercut you by $2 mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. they can afford to do it. And then it's just a race to free
yeah.
and nobody benefits in that regard. So it's counterintuitive, but it is much more effective to see what else is out there. I'm not saying don't do any research, but see what else is out there and price yourself above what mm-hmm. the going rate is. And don't do it arbitrarily, but price yourself above. And also communicate the clear value of what you do. Because if you can pair a confident pricing for whatever it is with a clear explanation of the value that you're bringing, people are going to be excited about paying you. There's, I think, for people who are more anxious, like you, like I think one of the reasons that you had kind of a freak out when people started paying is because you had this maybe subconscious vision that they were coming with torches and pitchforks to our house to demand their money back or something like that. And
that's not what people do.
That's not what people do. That's not what people do. So especially if you're confident in what you're doing and you know that you can do the thing that you're asking people to pay for, present yourself as confident, even if you don't feel like it. And that's going to go a real long way in establishing your credibility. The other thing to keep in mind is that there's a spectrum of things you can do to get the word out about your offer and about your side hustle that you want to start. The most effective way to sell a new thing is to reach out to your existing network. So people that you know already. So posting about mm-hmm. it on your personal social media, yeah. word of mouth. You know, you run into people at the gym, you run into people at the library, at the coffee shop, at church, wherever you're just kind of out and about. Don't be afraid to just let people know, like, hey, I'm doing this thing mm-hmm. now. They might not be the ones to buy it, mm-hmm. but they might know somebody who does want that thing.
Yeah.
So that can be a very effective way because you already have established credibility with the people that you know. They know right. who you are. And so there's already less resistance to purchasing the thing that you're doing.
They might not know that you do that specific product or service, but you don't have to trust or you don't have to build the trust that you as a person are trustworthy.
Exactly. So start there. The next thing that you want to do is start establishing your expertise by sharing free things online, sharing free content. So writing some blog posts, even just if you're on, you know, TikTok, sharing a few videos about what you're doing, kind of maybe it's a behind the scenes process or you're showing the before and after results of what you do. Everything that you could ever possibly learn is already online. Like mm-hmm. you're not giving away the secret sauce mm-hmm. recipe for whatever you're doing. People could figure it out. What they're not paying you for the secret knowledge that you have. They're paying you to do the thing mm-hmm. for them. They're paying you for the time that it saves them. They're not paying you for, they're almost never paying you for the knowledge that you have
yeah.
about it because they can figure it out
right.
if they wanted to. They right. don't want to. They just want you to do it for them.
Right. You're taking the years of time and effort and trial and error and condensing it down into a very short period of time. And that's what they're paying for, is avoiding all the time and heartache that you had to put into to learn that.
Exactly. So as you continue to share some of these free things and behind the scenes, some tips and tricks, some advice, you're establishing your credibility in that area. Mm-hmm. And you're also going to bring yourself some business along the way. So reach out to your existing network, share some free things, and only after you feel like you've tapped out both of those areas.
And honestly, like if we're talking about summer side hustles, that's probably all you need to do unless you're trying to build it into a full-time business. You know, like
right.
if people set goals ahead of time of, I already work full-time, I want to, you know, do enough to bring in an additional $500 a month. They don't have to be overwhelmed by the idea that like advertising is going to take half of their time or what, you know, like I didn't find the two houses that I'm cleaning by me posting in the Facebook Moms group. I found it by searching the Facebook Moms group for the keyword house cleaning and then found posts of other people's where they had posted in the group saying, does anybody know anybody who cleans houses? We're looking for someone. And I did not comment on those posts. I messaged individually the people who posted it and the people who commented on it like, oh, I don't know anybody, but I'm looking too, and responded to those. And now I have, like I said, the one that wants once a month and the one that wants two a month. And I don't really think I'm going to do beyond that. And so it can be that straightforward. Even if you use these same strategies, it's not a full-time business.
Exactly. So the next level would be cold reach outs to people you don't know, that you don't have a prior relationship to.
Who didn't already identify that they want that.
Right. Convincing strangers to buy your thing. That right. takes a lot of time and work and skill and effort. And then the other thing is buying paid ads mm-hmm. for your service on whether it's social media ads or...
Which even for Debt Free Mom, we don't even really do.
No. So those things are down the road. If mm-hmm. you're thinking, I need to start a side hustle, I need to buy some ads, don't start there. Definitely don't start there. Start with people you know. And then after you have some people that you know and are in your current network, your mm-hmm. current circles, then you can start posting some things online for free mm-hmm. that people can see and share and see and view you as an expert in mm-hmm. that specific area. So I encourage you to start that summer side hustle. This is a perfect time to get started with it, to take that first step into identifying what you're good at, crafting that offer to communicate the value that you're going to bring to people, and then share it with the people that you know. Those are great ways to bring in just a little bit of extra money on the side, doing something you already know how to do. And if you know how to do it already, you're likely enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
So why not turn that into a little bit of extra money this summer with the summer side hustle?
Sounds good to me.
Thanks for listening to the Debt-Free Mom Podcast. If you want to join me as a guest on the show, go to dfmpodcast.com. The Debt-Free Mom Podcast is hosted by me, Carly Hill, and is produced, edited, and mixed by Kyle Hill. Music for this episode was written by Kyle Hill. Hit subscribe wherever you're listening to join in with every new episode as we grow our confidence and contentment in our personal finances.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.